we always do with Dr. Raymond Keller, who is probably the, well, outside of NASA and Intel and military, the number one authority on Venus and what's really going on up there. And what's going on up there is a lot, just like what's going on our moon. And it is ours, even though it may have been towed here. We don't know. That's the story anyhow, according to some. The issue we were touching on before the break is the ET contactee report called the Derenberger Report, D-E-R-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, Derenberger, Woodrow Derenberger. This is a very interesting paper. I've been scanning it, and proud to say it's up on the site. You'll be able to read it, and it's quite a story. It's very touching. His contact with ETs caused the loss of his family. His wife left him. 1966 was the first contact, November 2nd. He was a salesman for a sewing machine company. Sounds like one of those door-to-door things. Could have been. He was driving his pickup truck back home in an effort to get home to Mineral Wells, West Virginia, on the outskirts of Parkersburg, as you said, just off Interstate 77. About halfway between Parkersburg and his home, a big saucer-shaped craft nestled down on the South Hill Road in front of Derenberger's pickup truck. The object literally covered the width of the highway from berm to berm. Surprisingly, Derenberger was more curious than anxious about the landing. He noticed a hatch opening up on the side of the object, and there was an intense light pouring out from the open portal. And out stepped a slim, seemingly very fit specimen of a man, dark-skinned and middle-aged. Derenberger estimated him to be about 40 years of age, plus or minus 5 years. The ET started walking over to Derenberger's pickup truck, and then the mysterious craft suddenly rose to about 50 feet in the air, hovering overhead while the visitor approached Woodrow's truck, mentally transmitting the thought to him that he desired the experiencer to roll down the window and have a little talk with him. Derenberger being the experiencer, of course. Yeah. Derenberger complied, rolling down his window. We'll assume it's the driver's side window. The ET identified itself as being one Indrid, I-N-D-R-I-D, Indrid Cold. Very interesting name. As you said earlier, a searcher of the cosmos. So we have this, a really remarkable document. Who put the document together? Ray, did you do this?
Yes, I put it together, and it comes from many different sources. One is a defunct magazine called Flying Saucers UFO Reports, and it's a Mrs. Spawn Marling, who is the one of the first people to interview Woody for a national magazine. That was back in October of 1967. Another source was the Archives of the Saucerian. The Saucerian was a magazine that was, or Saucer News.
That was a very famous magazine for a while.
Oh, yeah, it was. The Saucerian Press in West Virginia. And then... so they're old archives, as well as many local newspapers, and then other individuals who had similar experiences with aliens like Woody. They have original drawings from his son of the Langulotians, whom Woody described as time travelers, and his son was able to explain time travel and do a diagram of it. So I have that in the...
That would have been his son, Greg, and he had a daughter, Tanya.
Yes.
Very interesting. This is really quite a story.
I have John A. Keel's files on the case.
You do?
And those are extensively cited, his analysis and the connection with a mysterious creature that was sighted in the area around the same time, that was known hereabouts in West Virginia as the Mothman.
That's John Keel's probably biggest known story, the Mothman.
And then there's Larry W. Murphy. He was a police reporter for a local newspaper in Parkersburg. He's in there. And then also I've found information from a publication that's also no longer in existence, that was all about, had a lot of stories about outer space and UFOs and so forth, called The Bachelor News. And then there's Fate Magazine.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
And I was working with Phyllis Galdi, the editor of Fate Magazine, and the current issue is going to post a picture that I found in my archives of Orfeo Angelucci that hasn't been seen before. So if you happen to be out there and you see an issue of Fate, they have a big feature story on the contactees. And
I didn't know Phyllis was still editing that. That's very interesting.
Yes, she's still doing it. And then I have actual letters from Woodrow Derenberger in there.
Did you meet Woody? Did you meet him ever?
No. But after all the unwarranted attention and publicity that was making his life miserable, plus the pressure and the insults and everything that he was getting from NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, which was the largest UFO group, civilian UFO group at the time. You wouldn't expect that from fellow ufologists, but that's what was happening. Because the director there, Major Donald E. Kehoe, it was his belief that that these UFOs were only conducting a reconnaissance of the Earth, but that the beings never got out themselves and communicated with anyone, which seems ridiculous. If we were to send a spacecraft to a manned spacecraft to another planet and find local inhabitants, we'd want to find out all we could about them. And I'm sure we want to communicate with them. And they tried to, and then the efforts of NICAP to shut Woody down and silence him were even more vicious than the
government. Well, what does that tell us about NICAP and its ultimate parentage?
Yes. We know that the directors of and some of the board of directors were either on the CIA or they were part of the CIA or other organizations.
Remember, the Mutual UFO Network's original director for 30 some years, Walt Andrus.
Yes.
His brother was CIA. So you think there might be a link there? What better way to collect data on contacts and sightings than to found the biggest organization that uses the free labor of people all around the world to collate, collect, and submit information. So it's not a big surprise to anyone that MUFON has intel connections. Probably was found. In my view, it's an intel operation, always has been. That's just the way intelligence works. Let me read a little bit more of this. I'm going to go back to Annabelle if we can.
Okay.
And then we got to go to Howard Menger's farm. Let's see. Hold on. This is about the Derenberger report. Mrs. Derenberger told Marling, the UFO researcher, that, quote, they have 9 scout ships in this area, end quote, providing the lead in for her husband Woody to follow up with details. Taking the cue, he replied, yes, 2 men to a craft, except one ship that had 4. On one craft, there was a husband and wife team. Marling wanted to know if Cold, Indrid Cold, was still insisting that his visits to Derenberger were of a friendly nature, and that Cold had promised that no harm would come to him or his family in the future. Woody said, he reassured me. That's a quote. He's told me on several occasions that the people on his planet travel and trade with other planets all the time, and that that's what they want to do here. Lanulos, L-A-N-U-L-O-S, has many things that would be of value to us, and we have many things that would be of value to Lanulos. Indrid Cold, that's quite a name, Indrid Cold, wants to have a friendly exchange. So the reporter UFO investigator wondered if the Earth and our solar system weren't too far away for a working trade agreement to be set up with the planet Lanulos. Derenberger replied, there is a landing base on the moon, which is shared by many interplanetary civilizations. Those from Lanulos also have a mothership up there, big as a football field and 9 stories high, equipped with berthing docks on the outside. The scout ships land there and are taken aboard the mothership. Sounds like movies we've seen before. Skeptical, the reporter, UFO reporter, Marling, opined that if there's something like that up there on the moon, I should think that scientists over at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, would be interested in it. Oh, said Woody, NASA knows all about it, knows more about it than I do. I took my family down to Cape Kennedy not long ago, and we were talking with some of the NASA people. I told them Indrid had seen all the devices we have put on the moon, had even waved at the cameras. He's seen every astronaut who's ever gone up and has waved at them, and they've waved back. NASA said they knew all about it. I had told them nothing new. And when I told them, there were people on Venus and Mars just like us, they knew that too, Woody affirmed. So there you go. I'm going to stop here because we could spend the rest of the time on this. It's there for your reading pleasure. Ray, what else do you want to add to that before we switch to a different subject?
Well, Jeff, I want to add on to what we were saying before. I do have the documentation in this report. There's an actual letter here reproduced from Woody, and it relates the story of Alan Roberts, M.D., and the psychiatrist who examined me for NICAP. And then it also talks about NICAP, and here's an important thing. It says the psychiatrist's frank admission to Derenberger underscores the growing rift that existed between the membership of NICAP and its leadership. Just 1 year after Derenberger's letter, NICAP went into a gradual decline in its membership, starting with the expulsion of the Marine Corps Major Donald E. Kehoe as its director, replacing him with the retired Air Force Major Joseph Bryan III, who was also an employee of the CIA. And then it goes on and lists, the government involvement with this with this obscure case, landing case in rural West Virginia. So, it was attracting a lot of attention. And I'll be having a new book that'll be coming out at Mount Shasta this summer. And that book details the foundations of the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, APRO, and its early years in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And that book is going to be a blockbuster. As many know, it was Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who was the scientific advisor to APRO, who wrote the introduction to my book, the first book in the series, Venus Rising.
And that's I was quite a member. Yeah, very good.
I was a member of APRO, and what you were saying about MUFON and has a lot to do with the destruction of APRO as an effective organization and putting an end to a great research group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, no room for any competition. Clear the table. Interesting.
Hate to say that, but I mean that's just the fact of the matter.
Right. Well, the poor Derenberger family, there were people coming to their home, driving from all over the place. There'd be sometimes 10 or 15 people who would come up and knock on the door every day. There were people up in the trees on their property with guns waiting for the spaceship to show up again. They weren't apparently going to shoot it unless they were harmed or in fear of their lives, but it got to be a freak show. And so that was pretty much the end, and Woody started drinking, as one can understand. Anyway, read the story. It's fascinating. Done a really nice job writing it, as always, Ray. Well done.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to Annabelle, and her relations with Val Thor. Valiant Thor is a Venusian who came here, and if you look under Ray's name, I've got to find it, but there, you'll see photos there. Here, I've got it now. You'll see photographs, and what we should do, can you see these photographs?
Yes.
On your computer?
When the listeners go to the... on the first page where I am at the bottom of my section, it says more. And then when they click that, they can go to oodles of sections with lots of Valiant Thor information never before seen.
Now, Ray's section is over on the right side under featured stories. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, but if you go in guests... Just click on guests, and you look under Raymond Keller, and you'll see photos of E.T., Valiant Thor, and two other E.T.s who came to the Howard Menger? I always get that confused.
Yes, that's right. Howard Menger Farm in Highbridge, New Jersey.
Yeah. And what year would that have been, that meeting?
That was on the section there that says, is there E.T. life on Venus, the story of Valiant Thor? Down there I have the actual date of the meeting. This is a letter from August C. Roberts, dated July 24th, 1958, and it says it was an account of him and Dominic Lucchesi that they were going on their way to that meeting, and it was July 13th, 1958, a Sunday.
Okay. All right. You go in guests and look for photos. You'll see it. It's right there. Photos of Howard Menger and others taken by August Roberts the day Val Thor and crew came to the UFO meeting at the farm in Highbridge, New Jersey. And all the pictures there are really well worth looking at. They're historic. These are historic things that reflect a time that is almost lost to history. But if it weren't for people like Ray, I guess it would be lost. But these were big newsmakers back in the day when the media was still allowed to report on contactees, on UFO landings, on sightings, on all kinds of things, which they're no longer allowed to do. So if you pull up that link and scroll down, you'll see first a picture of Howard Menger with the sunglasses on.
Yes.
You roll down below that, and you'll see a photo of Howard. I don't know who the lady is.
Oh, that's his. That's his first wife, Rose.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's Rose, and then Howard Menger. Yeah, and then we've got a picture of a little girl out in the back of the farm.
That's Mary Ann Tharp. She was a member of the Hybrid UFO Club, and she said that. She and others saw a spaceman jump over the bushes and fence, a total of about 15 feet across.
See, back in the day, then, there were UFO clubs all over the country. This was very common. And if you go back and look at old newspapers, you probably can't find too many issues that don't have a front or, a second page story about UFO sightings or events, and these were big events in the media back then. Not now. Things are totally
different.
Oh yes,
and my third book, Jeff, is a Cosmic Rays Excellent Venus Adventure. I delved into the history of the oldest flying saucer club, the Interplanetary Spacecraft Club in Paradise, California. And I was invited to the Paradise Library by the city of Paradise to do a presentation on the history of the UFO Club and the connections with Venusians and the visit of a prominent contactee there in the early 1950s. Before the city even became incorporated.
Right. I'm going to go through the break, Todd. Thanks. I'm going to keep going. This is really interesting. And I think our sponsors will understand and appreciate that. The pictures we're rolling down through, again, are available right in Guests. Easiest way to get them. You'll find them. They're there. Third item down. Photos of E.T., Valiant Thor, and two others, ETs, as they came to the Howard Menger UFO meeting at his farm in 1958. So click on that link, and we're going to roll down. I'm going to show you pictures of Valiant Thor and his crew, and you'll see these people were not normal-looking people, you'll see. So we're scrolling down. You'll see a picture of Howard Menger sitting on the radiator by the window. That's a heater. In the house.
That's inside his home, in the living room.
Hold on to his pipe there. People used to smoke pipes a lot. Then the next picture is of the group outside at the farm during the meeting. And they have
tables and
chairs.
That's the actual Flying Saucer Club.
Mm-hmm. That's it, yeah. Tables and chairs. And then there's a picture of Howard and his wife, Rose, and his youngest son, at that very meeting. Go ahead.
And that particular night, his son talked about seeing a mothership.
Mm-hmm.
He added his own testimony. That was at night. That was at the, it was kind of like a revival meeting almost.
Wow, okay. Then we see a table top with a bunch of photographs on it. Of obviously a flying disc.
Yes, that's a Venusian scout ship. It's about 50 feet in diameter, and it has an electromagnetic propulsion. And you see up in the upper left-hand corner the small tablet, and then
And I see Howard's sunglasses there too.
Yeah. Yes, Howard's sunglasses, and then that little tablet is the one that had the note that was written. Valiant Thor had two notepads with him that night, and on that small one, he wrote some comments about George Adamski. But on the other one, the larger line pad, he wrote extensively on Howard's talk, on Howard's presentation to the UFO Club. And so on your site are Valiant Thor's actual notes that he took that evening.
Yeah, go on the right side later on and scroll down and find Ray. You'll find Raymond Keller, and there's a lot of material there, just a ton to go through. We'll keep scrolling down, go past the pictures on the tabletop. That does look like a classic Adamski craft, does it not?
Yes, that is a Venusian craft, and you see the one in the center that's standing alone above the others.
Yes.
The top picture, you'll see an occupant, a flying saucer occupant, actually standing in front
wow.
of it.
And who took these pictures? Do you remember?
This is Howard, but I have pictures mm-hmm. that were taken by Connie. Of these types of transmigrific craft that apparently were between a living organism and a spaceship, and and they were taken over the hills in Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania.
In your earlier visits, we've talked about her at great length. For those of you in the archives, look up Raymond Keller in the past and enjoy. Just a wonderful amount of programs and material there. Okay, next picture down is a group of people, and there's Howard looking at a pressure cooker.
That is down in the basement. That's mm-hmm. in the basement of his home.
Well, it doesn't look like the living room, so I agree. That's a lady there with a hairnet and a mink coat. See that? Look at that.
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of influential people sought after Howard Menger and a lot of these contactees. They understood mm-hmm. the importance of his message and wanted to play a part in the work that he and other contactees were doing at the time.
Was Howard a contactee of great repute, or was he kind of a minor player back then?
Well, at the time, he was. I guess he was in the. You could say he was in the major leagues. He was a frequent guest on Long John Neville's program on 710 on the AM dial in New York that went out mm-hmm. to 25 states.
Well, Howard was a big player then. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yes, he was a big, big player. And after he wrote his book, From Outer Space to You, in 1959, which I also have all of the letters that came to him in the first year, which I'll share with your audience on a future
episode. Oh, that'll be fun. I bet he had some fascinating letters come in after that.
Oh, yes. Oh. What I did, because all the letters were so long and everything, what I did was I encapsulized them by the names of the author of the letter, where mm-hmm. the letter was postmarked from, and then a brief synopsis in one or two sentences about their opinions about the book, and about 80% of the people were very favorable to the book, I have to say.
Okay.
And I found this to be the same with my Venus books, is that probably 95% of the people who read them have nothing but good things to say about them,
and the rest of them you disregard, forget them. All right.
Oh, yes. And I have people I've had some people complain about, saying that they're not really Venusians because they look like, they look like human beings. but of course, I mean, I state that plainly in the book. What do they expect?
Forget. Don't just forget them. All right. Mary Ann Tharp, okay, at the location she claims she saw a disc while with a group with Howard Menger. Okay, next picture, very important. You'll see a gentleman in a suit and a tie, and to another gentleman in a suit and a tie, and then a blonde lady. Now, these people came to the meeting. The person on the right is Valiant Thor, a Venusian commander. Don't laugh. This is the story. Those three people, look at them. Do they look like normal Americans at a UFO club meeting? Not at all. This is a remarkable thing. They showed up at the meeting. Did Menger tell anyone that Valiant Thor and his two, we'll call them crewmates, was going to show up at this meeting?
No, he didn't know himself, and neither did August C. Roberts.
But, the photographer, yeah.
Yes, I'd like to read something out of my first book, Venus Rising, about this incident. And then I have some new information to add this evening that will really startle and amaze everybody. This is just one paragraph, and then I'll follow it up with this revelation. Insofar as the Reverend displaying the photographs of the aliens at his book lectures, that would be Dr. Frankie Strange's and his book Flying Saucerama, it was purely in the context of demonstrating an increasing public interest in flying saucers, in particular as it was manifested at one of contactee Howard Menger's meetings. Strange's had no idea who the people were individually in the photographs taken at the Menger farm, although the photojournalist August C. Roberts did note that one later identified as Valiant Thor had attracted his attention and those of all the others in the in attendance at the April. This is the wrong date here. It was July 1958 meeting, as he was speaking many languages fluently, to include Xhosa, a clicking South African indigenous dialect, and as well as Afrikaans. He also presented himself as a handsome figure who spoke authoritatively on such matters as extraterrestrial life and space travel. Naturally, August C. Roberts, or Augie, as he had arrived with, or as his friends called him, could not help but take photographs of the gentleman and the contingent he had arrived with, sensing that he and his associates were definitely special and that the pictures would someday have some great historical significance. Now, to follow up on that, I recently came across some information in my archives. And this is the South African connection here with Valiant Thor. This comes from the June 1957 issue of Flying Saucers from Other Worlds. Now, that was published by Raymond A. Palmer in Amherst, Wisconsin. And there's an article on page 65, begins on page 65, Elizabeth Clarer's Flying Saucer. Right. And this deals with the contacts of one Mrs. Elizabeth Clarer of Natal, South Africa, on the 17th of July, 1955, with a contingent of Venusians in a landed scout ship. And she took a series of four pictures of a Venusian scout ship. They're published here, and I'll post them later on online for you.
Okay, we'll put them up under your name there on the right-hand side. You have to scroll down a little bit of a ways to get to Dr. Raymond Keller, Ph.D. You'll see it. The book cover there says My Excellent Venus Adventure. You'll see it. And we have earlier radio programs there for your listening enjoyment. We'll put this one up there as well. And then there's a link at the bottom, more, and you'll go to see more. There are more pictures and things. It's a fascinating collection, so don't miss it when you have a little spare time.
Jeff, ahead, what's Ron. Exciting about this thing about Elizabeth Clare is that she's interviewed by a South African journalist, and she wrote a book, or this gentleman wrote a book about her, Edgar Severs of Pretoria, South Africa, wrote a saucer investigator, wrote a book, Flying Saucers, Uber, South Africa. And it documents the presence of a Venusian space base in the Drakensberg Range, a range of mountains that's not far from Elizabeth Clare's home. And that Valiant Thor came from there. Now, Valiant Thor, he first arrived in a lone scout ship I have the date and all that information in the Venus Rising book, and the account of that outside of Alexandria, Virginia, in 1957. And he stayed in the Pentagon for 3 years, just occasionally going out and monitoring UFO meetings and things like that, which Howard Menger's farm. So there's a connection there. There's a real connection and proof of this South African connection
Ray, wasn't Elizabeth Clare the greatest UFO researcher in South Africa and Southern Africa in general? She was it.
Yes, from what I understand, I've been looking into this seriously lately, and she is preeminent there in the annals of ufology in South Africa.
I don't believe she's still with us, but if I'm not mistaken, she was on this program once from South Africa.
Wow!
If that's the one I'm thinking of, she was a guest. And we talked about some of the extraordinary things she was recording, and no one else was doing it. She was the only one. She was the researcher in Southern Africa, and especially South Africa. And she had reported on some sensational things. I remember this, and either she was on or somebody that knew her was on talking all about her work, one or the other. Anyway, go ahead, Ray.
Okay. Yes, this is from Venus Rising, and it's the book is over, is like 300 and some pages long, so there's plenty of material here. But it was the 16th of March, 1957. A lone scout craft was deployed from the mothership, piloted by Thor, who carefully guided it to a graceful landing on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., in the suburb of Alexandria, Virginia, whence he was met by two police officers, weapons drawn. Apart from the Cuban Missile Crisis, this may have been one of the tensest moments in the history of Earth. If the police officers failed to follow established protocols and shot the commander, either wounding or killing him, what dire consequences might befall the Earth and its inhabitants? So we have to remember the time that Valiant Thor landed. This was a time when we were in the Cold War with the Soviets.
Sure.
There was a tremendous buildup, a nuclear arms race, and it was also the beginning of the space race. So we had the delivery systems on both sides to literally blanket the Earth with nuclear destruction. So I think that Valiant Thor's mission on Earth was largely successful, because in 1966 there were treaties signed for the demilitarization of outer space and the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. Nuclear Weapons Test Ban Treaty and so forth. And this is what Valiant Thor came to do, and at least that succeeded.
Good. Okay. All right. Very good. So let's see now. We want to go Please ask Ray about the new data he has uncovered about Dr. Strange's and Valiant Thor and how he obtained it. Okay, have we gotten into that yet?
Okay, I haven't posted this yet.
Well, if it's not ready to go, we'll wait until it's ready and have you back. So,
okay,
no,
I could tell you what it is, though, is that when I was publishing the Flying Saucer Report and the New Millennial Star, beginning in the mid-1960s, I exchanged publications with ufologists from all around the world, including Dr. Frankie Strange's in Van Nuys, California. So I have tons and tons of material from him, and a lot of it never before seen. And it's going to be, I will funnel that information to you through your appropriate channel.
Great, very good. Okay, so again, for all of you who may have missed it, just go over on the right-hand side under Featured Stories and scroll away. You have to scroll way down past the coronavirus spike protein vaccine nightmare, and then you'll find Dr. Raymond Keller down there. And it's well worth your time. Fascinating material from an age that is just not understood by most people, period, today. Anyone under the age of 50 knows nothing about this to speak of unless they've heard the programs here. A lot of photographs of Valiant Thor and friends at that meeting at the farm. I knew George Van Tassel's son. I think it was his son. He was a Van Tassel. He was a car salesman in Santa Barbara. And he gave me his card once. I just ran into him. There are no coincidences. I ran into him and we had a nice talk about Giant Rock and all that. I think it was his son or his nephew. I don't remember which. Anyhow, so, yeah, on the more link, you'll go back to a second page of a lot of interesting things. But you look at the other pictures of Valiant Thor, the alleged Venusian commander, and his two crewmates, the blonde and the other dark-haired gentleman, dressed immaculately. They don't fit at all, but they're there, and they showed up unannounced. And this was what Valiant Thor's mission was here, apparently, to a large degree, was to monitor our growing awareness of the UFO-ET phenomenon as being quite real and to see how we handled it. This is remembered during the decade of the 1950s when Hollywood was cranking out all of these amazingly spectacular science fiction ET movies, just remarkable films. And a lot of that was CIA, clearly to see how people would react. They were tracking, and it was quite a period of history. So there you go. Go ahead, Ray. We have about 6 minutes.
On that site also, there's the connection with Valiant Thor and the passing of George Adamski from the material plane to the other side, the other side of the veil.
The etheric, yes.
Right, the etheric plane, and so you could see Val Thor's ship there, engaging a force field that kind of distorts its the shape of the fuselage in the front, and you could also see Val Thor's appearance over the pyramids in Egypt with his spacecraft as well on the anniversary of George Adamski's death. And that is posted also there on the website.
Very
Val
good.
Thor and the transition of George Adamski.
Right. As far as we know, Val Thor went back to Venus. Venus, if it is indeed inhabited, it's underground. It's not on the surface as far as we know. It's mostly underground.
Most of the civilization is underground. There are a few structures on the surface, but the surface isn't as hostile as they would have us believe.
Right. We have 5 minutes. What do you want to talk about that we haven't gotten to yet?
Okay. Well, the other book is The Vast Venus Conspiracy, so we haven't really talked about that one yet. Okay. But that book, a lot of the recent findings and revelations about Venus seem to be a vindication of not only my message, but all the contactees that have come before. And just recently, two spectacular discoveries were made on Venus. One was the existence of these phosphines in the Venusian atmosphere that can only be produced by life forms. And the other one was the photograph taken by the Parker Solar Probe when it used Venus as a gravitational slingshot on its way to the sun. And it took pictures of the backside that's supposed to be dark, and it was all lit up.
Hmm.
So this is an indication that vindicates what I had written about biofluorescent insect life swarming in the atmosphere of Venus, and also the pictures that were taken by the Soviets that showed that even regardless of what side that they had landed on, that it always appeared bright, like the New Mexico desert.
Hmm.
It wasn't dark and foreboding like it was under 93 atmospheres of pressure, or and it even looked like that there was some kind of vegetation and some kind of like a scorpion or something squiggling around on the ground.
All we have to do is compare the amount of images we have from Mars to the amount of imagery we have from Venus. It's virtually zero from Venus. We have not been allowed to see anything to speak of except for the Russian probe that landed on Venus and didn't last too long. So what we've done on Mars, we could have been doing on Venus. We could have been doing on the moon even more than we did, but we're not. So there are reasons
surprised,
for this.
What's surprising about that, Jeff, is that 45 space probes now have been sent to Venus. That's more than even the moon or any other.
Haven't heard a word about them. You never hear anything about them.
Right.
Blast off and that's it.
Then you don't hear anything more. So, we're living in the mushroom principle. They just keep us in the dark and feed us a lot of manure.
Oh, they're very good at that. Yeah. Now, when Valiant Thor was at Menger's meeting at his farm in 58 with his two crew members, he's the commander, he had a yellow legal pad, and he wrote a lot of notes on it. Now, you have that, do you not? Or did you? And you photocopied
it? Yes, I have it, and I submitted it. It's on your site, and people can read it. It was the notes taken on Howard Menger's speech to the UFO club.
Uh-huh.
And
must have been a heck of a speech for Valiant Thor to take a lot of notes like that.
A lot of information was released, especially about the Eskimo village that completely disappeared, mm-hmm. and it was receiving little attention in the press. And I thought that was extremely interesting. And in my articles on the disappearing UFO experiencers, that'll be in, that's also in the Venus 4 book, the Vast Venus Conspiracy.
You have contributed in those 5 books so much fascinating material, and one day I hope to be able to sit down and enjoy each page of each book. This era, this epoch of contactees is very important, and yet very few know about it today. And that's a shame. What would you give us a time spread? We're running out of time, speaking of time, but from 1950 to, what, 1965, in that area? Would that be the contactee, the highlight, the golden era of contactees?
Yes, you've said it very succinctly there. 1965 was the year that George Adamski passed away, and he was the first one to receive a significant amount of press and attention as a contactee in relaying the message that the Venusians have for us.
Wow. Okay, and you have John Keel's notes, some of his notes. We're going to have to do a couple more programs here when you're ready. You just let me know, and we'll have you back, Ray. Thank you. Very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, this has been
great.
Appreciate it. Okay, you take care.
Thank you, my friend.
Dr. Raymond Keller. And these are really extraordinary times we're talking about back in the day. And they're just not talked about anymore. Just like Venus is not talked about for a reason. We'll be right back. Hold on.